Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, July 22nd. A warm day in the desert, 105 degrees at the moment. But it's good to have you back. Max Armstrong will be joining us with another market guest. I'm Orion Samuelson, taking a look at, well, maybe a little bit of politics. Not too much, though, because there's another convention yet, and so I guess I'll wait for that one to really take a look at what's going on. But let's take a look at Wall Street today as we ended this week, and it brought the fourth straight positive week for the stock market. Today helped by strength in both AT&T and Verizon, and a U.S. manufacturing report came in above expectations. Building on upbeat data from earlier in the month, gains were limited, though, by weakness in reports from industrial companies, including General Electric. The S&P and the Dow have now broken to all-time records in the past 2 weeks for the first time in more than a year, amid a better-than-feared corporate earnings session. The S&P closed at another record high today. One analyst said, below it all is just an ongoing trend of better economic reports. Some of those are earnings reports, but they all line up to the same thing. It looks like growth is quickening. So the Dow Industrial Average for the day up 53 points, ending the week at 18,570. The S&P at a new record up nearly 10 points at 2175, and the NASDAQ composite added 26 points to 5100. And the S&P 500 is now up more than 6% in 2016. So we have shaken off a rough start to the year and global instability, I think, including Britain's recent vote to leave the European Union. Another strategist said we are well past the Brexit fallout and the subsequent rebound. But all 10 sectors of the S&P ended higher today, led by utilities. AT&T up 1.4%, Verizon up 1.3%. Incidentally, that company is the front runner for the core business of Yahoo. Yahoo closed up 1.4%. General Electric, on the other hand, down 1.6%. The U.S. industrial conglomerate reported weak demand for new oil, gas, and transportation equipment. Rival Honeywell fell 2.6% after the diversified manufacturer lowered its full-year sales forecast. But results from about 40% of the S&P 500 are now due next week, including reports from tech heavyweights, and we'll take a look at some of those heavyweights a little bit later in the program. But all in all, not a bad close to the end of a week, and during the week, a report on the health of the housing industry. Housing starts up more than expected in June. Construction activity increasing broadly. Groundbreaking up 4.8% to an annual pace of 1,190,000 units, according to the Commerce Department. The starts in May were revised down to a 1,140,000 unit pace. But housing starts in the second quarter were a touch higher than the average for the first 3 months of the year. And the housing market is being supported by a strengthening labor market and demand for rental accommodations. Home building, however, being constrained by labor and land shortages. Groundbreaking on single-family homes, and that's the largest segment of the housing market, increased 4.4% to a 778,000 unit pace in June. Single-family starts in the South, where most home building takes place, gained 0.5%. Single-family starts up 31% in the Northeast, up 3% in the West, and groundbreaking on single-family housing increased 7.3% in the Midwest. Housing starts, though, for the volatile multifamily segment rose a little over 5% to a 411,000 unit pace. And building permits, looking at the future, well, building permits went up 1.5% to an annual rate of 1,150,000 units last month. So that's pretty much the story on the housing industry as it continues a slow but steady recovery. Let me talk a little bit about the week of the Republican National Convention. It was important to the media industry. TV networks, helped by strong demand from advertisers, added hours of coverage for this week's Republican National Convention compared to 4 years ago. Presumptive presidential nominee Donald Trump may be new to politics, but the former star of his own reality show, The Apprentice, is a TV veteran, promising to throw out the traditional convention script and provide a showbiz feel. But stakes were high for the broadcast and cable networks. Media analysts predicted viewership for Trump's acceptance speech last night could surpass the record 38 million who watched Barack Obama address the Democratic Convention in 2008. But let's take a look at what CNN was getting advertising rate-wise for the convention. $40,000 and $100,000 for spots running 30 seconds, far above the typical cost of roughly $7,000 for a primetime ad on CNN. And a spokesman for CNN said, "We are 100% sold on primetime and about 95% sold on other slots." So the convention this week did have an impact on the income of television networks, for sure. Just a couple of comments from me editorially on the media coverage. I'm not all that proud of what we in media did on that Republican convention. You would have thought that a speech by a lady who apparently used some words from another speech, but who is not on the ballot, who we are not voting for, who will have little or no impact on how the nation goes and how the world goes, got all the attention it gets. That's all media could talk about was plagiarism. And then the Cruz appearance. My golly, I wanted to hear more about how are we going to do all the things that we promise. People complained about the bashing of Hillary and the Democrats. Well, tell you what. Next week, Hillary will do the same thing at the Democratic Convention. That's the purpose of a convention. But the important time now is from the end of the Democratic Convention until the first Tuesday of November. That's when the candidates are going to have to lay out their plans for what they plan to do to solve the myriad of problems that they talked about. So what's ahead for next week? Well, a host of Dow components reporting earnings, beginning with Apple, DuPont, United Technologies, Caterpillar, 3M, Verizon Holdings, and McDonald's Corporation on Tuesday. Apple expected to report quarterly revenue and profits slightly above estimates. The smartphone maker painted a gloomy picture in April with a weak forecast for the third quarter, but analysts are mixed on whether yet-to-be-released iPhone 7 smartphones can reinvigorate sales in the second half. DuPont expected to report a slightly lower quarterly profit, and part of that is the sluggish farm economy and the lower commodity prices that once again took a dive this week. We'll talk more about that later in the program. And on Thursday, the search giant Alphabet expected to report an increase in second quarter revenue, slightly above analyst estimates. Facebook will report on Wednesday. They're expecting slightly above estimates for them. And then next week, the U.S. Federal Reserve Open Market Committee begins a two-day meeting on interest rate policy. Federal Reserve all but certain to keep interest rates on hold on Wednesday. Maybe 5% of traders and analysts think there will be an increase in the interest rate, but not many people expect it. Thursday, we'll hear from Amazon. On Wednesday, we'll hear from Coca-Cola, Boeing, Merck & Company, ExxonMobil Corporation, Chevron will be reporting, Coca-Cola will be reporting, Merck & Company, the second biggest U.S. drug maker, will also be reporting, ExxonMobil, Chevron Corporation, United Technologies, Twitter, you name it. They're all going to be coming in next week. Flurry of economic data expected, and all eyes on the second quarter gross domestic product report on Friday. Commerce Department expected to show that economic growth regained speed after faltering in the first quarter. And other key data this week, June's durable goods orders on Wednesday. And we'll hear more on the housing industry, new home sales and house price reports coming out on Tuesday. Oh, back to earnings reports. Ford Motor Company will be reporting. So you can see we'll have more than enough information to digest to trade on Wall Street next week. Stay with us. We'll be back to talk agricultural markets when we continue on the market sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
This weekend, we're visiting about markets with Naomi Bloom from Stuart Peterson. West Bend, Wisconsin is where the worldwide headquarters of Stuart Peterson is located. This busy market season, as we're watching price gyrations here to the developing crops, where are you to begin with on this corn crop? And I ask that because I've talked with a lot of growers in recent days, some of whom cite some limited damage that they've had in terms of storms coming through. Wind damage, there's some hail damage, but as I often point out, when you get those storms, there's almost always beneficial precipitation, and we're in the midst of pollination. It's already happened for a big chunk of the corn crop. How do you assess what's going on right at this moment with our corn?
Well, when we talk with our clients, what we're not hearing is complaining. And so when we're not hearing complaining, then we need to assume that things are pretty good. And sure, there's the little snippets that come up about hail damage or things like that. But for the most part, like you said, the rain is coming with the heat. And overall, clients are saying that their crop is looking really good. Some people are saying it's the best it's ever looked. Some are quietly saying it's going to be their bin buster. They just, you know, don't want to say how good it really is because of market conditions and prices going lower. But it's a really big crop out there. And, you know, the most recent crop rating is 76% good to excellent nationwide. Iowa and Illinois are over 80% good to excellent. It is a big crop.
We've shifted the Corn Belt a little bit in recent years, so there's more corn in the Dakotas. Mm-hmm. That has not pollinated yet, has it?
Not to my knowledge, no. I think it's just getting started, and even where I live in Wisconsin, some of the fields have not pollinated yet. So that is something to be watching for as we go into August, because any late heat would still affect those regions in terms of pollination. But for right now, the market is just assuming that this heat dome that's sitting over us has some rain events associated with it. And so they're thinking that the crop can withstand a few days of 90 to 100 degree temperatures because there's a little bit of a cooling for the following week. Now, if that changes Sunday night or into Monday morning and they're taking the rain out, well, we'll be right back up in terms of prices.
A friend of mine who is a seed corn salesman also and watches developments closely said, you know, these fields are staying hot at night. And he said, that's one thing that kind of gets my attention is when you've got temperatures that camp out there well into the upper 70s and even low 80s, that can be a concern to yield, too. So we're going to watch this closely. Weekly crop bulletins, as you pointed out, have been very, very strong. Historically, in July, beginning in July, we'd start to see the corn rating fall, right, on into August. But that didn't happen last year.
Right. So what we're seeing it is for 3 weeks in a row staying phenomenal, 76% good to excellent. And you're right. Normally this time of year, it starts to stagger back down a little bit. And we're ahead of where we are from last year, obviously. And last year we had a cooler summer and just, you know, just a nice growing season. So it's really remarkable that the crop is as good as it says. Now, something that you just mentioned about the hotter nights is important because in 2010, the crop was rated at 72% good to excellent this time of year. But the last week of July and the first few weeks of August, it was so hot at night, the temperatures never got back below 70 degrees. And actually that year, the yield was 5% below trend line. So you're totally right. Nighttime temperatures can play effect into this market. So we have to be watching that for the coming weeks.
Have you formulated a corn yield idea at this point? Are you looking at a number that you think is pretty much on target in terms of corn yield? Here we are yet, 3 weeks ahead, I guess, of a major crop report with the first actual field estimate on corn size.
I would say that sticking right now with the USDA number of 168 is prudent because of the potential heat that could be coming up over the next couple of weeks. If we end up having it truly be cooler next week, then you're going to start to hear the market talking about yield at 170 or 171. But if that heat stays in there, then the conversation of 168 will stay in effect for a couple weeks. And then we'll see, though, if it would be a number that gets reduced over time, depending on the heat in August. But the number right now is 168.
Shifting attention to soybeans, certainly we have critical days ahead yet. What's your grasp of August weather from what you're hearing of the weather forecast and what it would mean subsequently to soybean yields?
What I've been hearing with weather is that it's still up in the air and that anything can happen yet. And you come into work one morning and the weather forecast is such, and then by noon it's totally different. So the market is going to trade every single weather fluctuation out there. The crop right now is rated, I believe, at 71% good to excellent, but it doesn't matter at all right now because the August weather is so critical that there's no parallel to draw between good to excellent ratings right now with what August can bring, because that will trump whatever the crop rating is right now.
We have seen that repeatedly, have we not, that a well-placed, well-timed rain in the month of August just makes a difference of night and day in soybean yields.
Oh, absolutely. We've seen it in years where that can be the peak of the market if the rain comes through at just the right time during the portion of August where it's needed. So weather is critical, and be ready for more volatility. You're going to see 30 cents up, 30 cents down every other day, just depending on the weather forecast.
Your advice there, I think, is good, is it not? To be ready. Be ready for volatility from the standpoint of the opportunity that can be presented there.
That's a great point. And, you know, when you say that and when you see it on the rallies, make sure that you're still working on those cash sales for anything that you have old crop. And if the beans at all can get a little bit of a spurt higher, it'll take the corn with it. And so that's going to be important for guys who still have corn in the bin, because right now your only hope for a rally is related to August heat and the soybean market moving higher. That's kind of the only hope. So on those rallies, be pricing out more sales because it would take dramatic 90 plus degree weather in August for 2 or 3 weeks with no rain in order to get the market prices back to where I think we're all secretly wanting them to be. And right now that may not be a reality unless the weather is truly that hot and dry.
The big fund traders, they haven't totally bailed on beans yet, have they?
Not totally, but last week they did reduce their short position, and that was the first, their long position, and that was the first time that we saw that in, boy, months. So we have to keep watching that. They're watching this weather forecast as much as everybody else, and if it turns out to be hot, they're going to come back in full bore and be buyers, but if it turns out to be good enough weather, then we're going to see them follow the seasonal pattern and then start to sell off their long positions, and then we'll see the prices work a little lower as well.
What do you make of the resurgent talk here that China is backing off, that China's economy is slowing, that China's purchases are slowing? You know, we hear that every now and then, every few months, that, oh, my goodness, you know, that's not the kind of economic growth that they were experiencing. And then Oil World, with its report a few days ago, stoked that talk once more. How do you sort that out?
Well, here's my take on that. Oil World said that they're going to be reducing their imports by 2.8 million tons. And so what that means to me is that they're just trying to reduce inventory internally. So it's not that they're not needing the demand. They're just trying to get rid of the supply that they have at home because they're thinking the United States is going to save the day. We're going to have a great crop. They're going to then be able to buy cheaper at harvest. They're going to be able to then refill their internal supplies at a cheaper value. They're just moving inventory and being good managers of their internal crop and their internal supply, but they'll be back and they'll be buying, just waiting for a cheaper price.
You've touched on something that we've noticed so often. They are truly shrewd traders, aren't they?
They seem to be. It would be fascinating to be a fly on the wall over there, wouldn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
As we take a look at yields here going on into the fall, is there a tendency, and especially I'm thinking about the soybean yield, as we start to get a grasp of that in September, does that number tend to climb as the year goes on?
That is a great question, and I'm not sure. I can't tell you off the top of my head, so I'm not sure.
It occurred to me that in the past, you know, we have a kind of a soft grasp on that when the first ratings, first crop estimates come out, and it seems like in the past 2 or 3 years, I have nothing to back this up, but in the back of my feeble mind, it seems like we've added to the yield as the season has gone on.
Oh, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me from the standpoint of that just keeps the story with bigger supplies and cheaper prices for everybody in the world. So it does seem like if the crop is deemed as sufficient and good enough, that the supplies continue to grow on those spreadsheets and the yield grows on the spreadsheets from the USDA. That is something to keep watch of in the coming weeks and months.
Can we expect a little volatility in that time frame after the August crop report and toward the end of August, simply because of the crop tours that'll be out there and that tends to whipsaw the market around some years?
Yeah, that I think is good fodder for day traders. But right now, with the big money in the market, unfortunately, seems to put more factor or opinion in the USDA reports versus the crop tours. So the crop tours might be a good precursor for what the USDA reports are going to be saying in the following months, and it's going to be really good for market news, day traders, and things like that. And yes, some last minute volatility in August. But if again they're on that crop tour and the yields are really looking good or the pod counts are there, then we're probably going to see the price slide then into the end of September, and that's when corn seasonally usually finds its low, end of September or early October. And then corn, I think, is going to be on sale. That'll be a buy.
It's good to see you, Naomi. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Naomi Bloom with Stuart Peterson Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
While a lot of attention focused on weather and crop conditions across the nation this week, there were some other things happening in the world of agriculture. As a matter of fact, Monsanto made the news twice this week. First of all, turning down a sweetened $64 billion acquisition offer from Bayer, but said it was open to further talks with the German healthcare and chemicals group, as well as other parties. Now, the widely expected rejection puts pressure on Bayer to sweeten its offer, at least enough to get access to Monsanto's books. Those two companies have been in discussions about a potential confidentiality agreement, according to a Reuters report. And Monsanto said earlier in the week its board unanimously viewed Bayer's latest bid as, quote, financially inadequate and insufficient to ensure deal certainty. So that's still out there in the wings waiting for further action. But I was surprised by the announcement today by the European Commission. European Commission, and boy, they've been tough with GMOs and biotechnology and all of that. But the European Commission today approved imports of Monsanto's Roundup Ready 2 Xtend genetically modified soybean variety after months of delays that had derailed Monsanto's product launch this spring. But that decision now clears the way for widespread planting next season, removes a hurdle for North American farmers and grain traders who have to keep close track of unapproved biotech traits that can disrupt trade. Top importer China approved the soybeans earlier this year. And grain trader and processor Archer Daniels Midland told Reuters today its elevators and processing plants will now accept the Extend soybean variety. Rivals Cargill, Bunge, and CHS, which had also refused to accept the variety without EU import approval, could not be immediately reached for comment late in the day on Friday. But the European Union is the second largest importer of soybeans, and its approval is not expected to have a major impact on merger talks by German suitor Bayer, who sweetened $64 billion buyout offer of Monsanto, as we mentioned a moment ago, was rejected last week. The European Commission also approved a Bayer Crop Science soybean variety. So some progress on the use of technology, and I think, you know, that comes from farmers who are in Europe and other countries of the world who feel they are at a disadvantage if they can't use the technology being developed here in the United States. Interesting report this week on the change in where corn is planted and grown in the last 10 years. Overall, areas in and around the Western Corn Belt grew in corn acres, while areas in the Eastern Corn Belt remained relatively the same. The most noticeable was growth in the Dakotas. North Dakota increased acreage by 1.4 million, and that's from 2004 to 2014, more than doubling of corn acres. And in 2014-15, corn acres harvested were 2.5 million acres, ranking 13 in all states in terms of acres harvested. And then South Dakota acres went up by 1.1 million from 2004 to 2014. That's an increase of 28% of corn acres. And over the last 10 years, U.S. corn acres grew by 7.2 million acres. However, changes in acres across the U.S. were not even. High growth areas included North and South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and Minnesota. But the Corn Belt apparently is moving, and it's moving further north. I want to share a feel-good story with you, too. This happened in Manchester, Iowa, where this week over $41,000 was raised for a scholarship in memory of a 13-year-old girl who died in a utility vehicle accident, and they raised the money through the repeated sale of a steer at an Iowa auction. The Telegraph Herald reported that 19-year-old Jamie Nefziger took his Black Angus to the auction ring at the Delaware County Fairgrounds in Manchester, Iowa, last Saturday. A letter was read aloud about the June 24th death of his 13-year-old cousin, Anna. So the first buyer bought the 1,710-pound steer and then said, "Let's sell it again." The process was repeated several times. The steer had been sold 11 times by the end of the auction. That's good living in rural America, and that's what they do. Now, as far as where we start trading on Monday morning, well, we did see markets move higher today in livestock and the cattle on feed report. The number of cattle placed on feed reported this afternoon up 1%, less than expected. So August live cattle will start Monday at $109.97 a hundredweight. August feeder cattle will start at $136.92. And August lean hogs will start trading Monday at $75.20 a hundredweight. In the grain market, both corn and wheat moved higher, so September wheat starts Monday at 425 and a quarter a bushel. September corn starts at 335 a bushel, but soybeans will be starting lower because the August bean contract moved lower today, and it'll start at 1006 and a half. Once again, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us. We enjoy these visits with you every week. on the market sponsored by the CME Group.